Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Adjacent. You're listening to the Sports Adjacent.
Okay, I like that. I just learned something new today. Adjacent.
With Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey on the House of L Network.
We're doing everything I dreamed of as an adjacent.
Do my weekly hit on the score. And yeah. It's usually just one question. This week it was, why is Chicago baseball so bad all of a sudden? Because the Cubs are shitty too right now.
They're not. They're probably more upsetting to people because they're not trying to be.
They were trying to be
bad, and they don't care. They're just like, deal with it. We're bad.
I think they care.
Give us your money anyway.
Not being as historically bad, like they might be the worst team in the history of baseball this year.
Could you imagine what interleague play brings to the equation? Like, I don't know which conferences are playing this year, but if you had White Sox and Marlins. If that was a game,
they'll play.
He's so far removed from his life as a baseball writer that he just referred to the AL and NL as conferences. And you have no idea. We're about to break news to you, Carlos.
Scheduling is a thing, Carlos. So everybody knows everybody now.
Something that happened 3 years ago.
So instead of playing 19 games against your division, you play, I believe it's 13 games against your division. And now those extra games that you get, they chop that up where everybody plays everybody because now the leagues are balanced. You have 15 and 15.
It feels like everybody loses in that scenario.
In the scenario where the Marlins play the White Sox? Yes.
Yep.
Yes, 100%.
I like it. I like that the team I follow will play everybody now in a given year. If you're a purist, I guess you probably don't like it.
It's great.
I don't like it or not like it. I just, you know,
the reality. You don't even know what baseball is anymore, do you? When's the last time you went to a baseball game?
Oh, no, not last year. I've been to a Browns game. Okay. Yeah, I just don't follow it closely because it's irrelevant to me. Baseball is irrelevant to me because the Marlins are our team.
And that is tough.
And it's an unwatchable team. It's a constantly breaking down an influx from ownership to player level. Like you can't get behind a player. You can't trust an ownership because you know that it's like we have a long history of betrayal.
So I tell Jason all the time, he's covered the same team from the time he was in Miami to Chicago. But I do think that's going to change this year. But the same is true for the baseball team that he cheers for. Like, he was down in Miami and saw the Marlins from a distance, even though he was a Sox fan. And he roots for basically the exact same team. Because everything you just mentioned there, Carlos, is the thing that's happening with the White Sox.
Everything now is we're going to tank and make it so bad until you either build us a new stadium or we move to Salt Lake City or something. Or Nashville. It's straight out of the Marlins playbook.
The sad part for me with the White Sox is that now people, and I'm not doing this, but people who root for the White Sox are cheering for the passing of their ownership group so that somebody else can buy the team and like care.
I think if they could sell the team, that'd be fine.
That's
I don't
a
need
losing
that.
Proposition.
Well, he won't do that, which is the point, Jason.
I don't need anyone to die over my baseball enjoyment, but.
The White Sox passing on into another pasture, to another realm, a dimension. Yeah.
Carlos, the White Sox are something like 15 and 50 right now. Something like that. That might even be it. I don't know.
To lose, I don't. But
the thing I always tell people, Russ, is I don't have any
games at the beginning of June.
I got no place else to go, man. This is where I watch baseball. I don't. I'm not just going
to
be.
We've had this fight before, and I think you refuse to go somewhere else. It's not that you don't have options. It's you refuse. You would rather watch maybe the worst team in the history of baseball than just watch the other 29 teams that many of which are actually really good. The Yankees are killing it right now. The Dodgers have so many different great players. The Phillies. You can go to those games too and watch the White Sox get their head kicked in if you want to. But like to continue to actively root for a team that you know, yeah, they don't care if you watch or not either. Like they're like, you're coming last.
To be fair, I don't care that much if I watch or not myself. But if I'm going to go to a game or watch a game, that's what it's going to be. That's where I go.
Yeah. I mean, it's. I think about the issue of like baseball welfare. I mean, this is a very sporty sports adjacent show. We're sport perpendicular right now. Yeah. We're crashing right into it. But the whole welfare system in baseball, you're getting your profit sharing if your team stinks anyway. Like that's, I think we've seen so many years of bad teams continuing to just be bad. And because, you know, that money is enough. That money is enough to keep the lights on and pockets full.
And to end our baseball conversation, when they choose to be historically bad, they pick the year that the rules change. So they could lose the most games in the history of baseball, and the highest they'll pick next year is 10th.
That's nice.
Yeah. Great.
I hope that you're right when you mentioned that you think my job's finally going to get interesting with the Bears this year, because I was telling my dad the other day, Monday, that in my entire career, I have never covered an NFL season that you would describe as a fun season. It's all been either mediocre or disastrous. I even covered a Dolphins team that made the playoffs like 8 years ago or something. They were like 10-6, made a wild card, but it wasn't fun. Their quarterback went down and they were just hanging on for dear life, hoping they got a wild card spot. And that team was not headed anywhere. Like last year's Bears team, for example, was 7-10. Not a fun year, not interesting really particularly, although interesting only in the bad ways for the most part. But at least you could see theoretically it's a step toward something else. Most of the NFL seasons I've covered have been neither fun or purposeful.
This might be the funnest year you've had. Most fun. I know funnest isn't a word. The most fun season you've had covering football. Because I think the team you'll cover this year should make the playoffs. And there's an expectation that they should make the playoffs. You have a quarterback in his first year that walks the walk, talks the talk. Now we just got to see if he can like actually play. And to be honest, in his first year, even if he and we've talked about this, I think he might throw 30 touchdowns, close to. He might throw 20 interceptions too. But it doesn't matter because this is the guy that you said we're putting all the chips behind this kid.
Well, he better be good. He better be good right away. I mean, he needs to be good as a rookie. I think it normally is not a fair expectation. I'd say it is here when so much is built
around him.
Yeah, you will drop back and have options, which is very rare for a rookie quarterback. So, yeah, I'm excited about that. I'm hoping it's going to be a fun year.
I mean, there's nothing as exciting in sports as a new quarterback, a new exciting young quarterback for your team as a potential franchise quarterback. Like nothing will galvanize a base and i.e. sell tickets like that. So I think that
and cut your legs out from under you when it turns out not to be the case.
Right. Like five games in,
which is always here. Always. That's all the time here.
To get off of sports, I threw up for the first time in like a year.
That's a hard pivot. Speaking of teams that won't make me want to throw up.
What a segue.
I threw up for the first time in a year.
Okay. All right.
Well, how are you going to follow that up?
Tell us about that.
So my best friend got married in Montego Bay, Jamaica. on Saturday. So from Thursday to Sunday, I was in Jamaica, and first time I'd ever been, and it was amazing, and it was beautiful, and it was so much fun. Like, I get off the plane, easy, get through customs. They have like this little fast pass, like you have at the amusement park, to get through customs and immigration. That's awesome. That I just take the money. It's fine. Because I'm not one these days that are going to wait. You guys know we've talked about reservations and stuff. So I get my bag, and unlike
I'm not waiting.
Places,
I'm not waiting to get into your country. If you don't let me right in, there's a bunch
let
of countries.
Me in now.
I can fly right over to Cuba. I can fly
right.
over
go
to
somewhere
Dominican
else. Right. Yeah. Fine. I'm going back.
Right. So I get all my stuff, and they don't have Uber there. Right. You have taxis and personal drivers. So I booked a driver in advance. And I see him. I go over there. He shakes my hand. Gua gua and brethren. And I say, yo, what's going on, man? He takes my bag and he goes, first time in Jamaica. And I'm like, yeah, actually it is. And he goes, welcome to Jamrock. And it's like one of those moments like in a movie where he would say that. And then like I start to look and you see the mountainous regions of Jamaica. And it's warm and you're smelling just the tropical Caribbean air, the ocean air. And it's like, wow, this is awesome. And then get to the hotel and you walk in. And while they're checking you in, because it's a process, I'm at an all-inclusive resort. Oh, would you like anything to drink? And I tell the lady, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'll just take a water. And the other lady that was at desk say, we don't do water in Jamaica. We do rum punch. And so I'm like, listen, you ain't got to tell me twice. So
when
I have
Jam Rock.
I had when in Jam Rock. So I had my first of at least 2 gallons of rum punch.
Okay.
I see.
And
where
so
this is going.
I had a lot the first day. I had a lot the second day. The day of the wedding.
You took a liking to it.
Yeah, I did. I did. Yes. The day of the wedding, me and my friends started just having a little drink to settle everybody before the ceremony. So I get there about 1:00. The wedding's at 5:00. Go down to the bar. We have a drink. We go up to the groom suite and we're having a good time. And then ceremony's fantastic. Then the reception starts. And then they have a cocktail hour before the reception starts. See, I've been to a couple weddings recently where you have the cocktail hour while the wedding party takes pictures.
Yeah.
And that's the hour that gets me in trouble.
That's
makes the reception fun.
That's what makes the reception fun. So,
Well, I already think this is a success because you told us you threw up, but you have already gotten through the ceremony part of the story and that hasn't happened yet. So
right.
Already not bad.
Right. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I was the best man for this, right? So I had a little bit more responsibility going into the day than everybody else. It was just chilling. And also in the back of my mind, I know, yo, I got this best man speech coming up.
Oh, no.
You know, no. Listen, this is me, Jason. We don't have to worry about that. If it was that story, I would not be telling it.
I need to hear that story offline. Again,
I have a drink.
No, he's saying if that happened.
If it was bad, yeah. I would tell that story. I wouldn't tell that story.
It was good.
Yeah.
He's putting a floor on how bad this is going to be.
So we catch the tail end of cocktail hour because we were taking bridal party photos. Mm. Get my drink. And then you go get a drink before the ceremony start. They allow that. And then they start pouring champagne for the toast. Then you get food. And then as you're eating, blah, 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 I give my speech. Crushed, by the way. People were crying. So that's how you know it's good.
Yeah.
I even started to tear up reading it. That's how you know you put your heart and soul into it.
Was it short or long? Yo, but was it?
Whoa. No, I'm a writer, Jason. I can't shortchange my boy.
Oh, but sometimes being a great writer is being concise. And I think almost always giving a great speech is being concise.
Nah, not in that case. I think you need to. I think as in the best man speech, you have to, for me personally, I wanted people to understand why I was the person that got this honor. So basically, I told the story of the day I met my best friend.
So you made it about you is what you're saying.
No, no,
a little.
No. I told the story about
a little bit like you made it about you.
I told the story of the day we met. Yeah. I told the story about the day we met, and the day he told me that he met his now wife and how that conversation went. And then I thanked her for being the best, the person that my best friend deserved, blah, blah, blah. Tears, cheers. It was great. Then we get to the dancing part of the evening, right? Now, it's me and a lot of my friends were groomsmen for this. And so we already had the hype there. And then you add alcohol into that mix. And I say, I'm one of those guys. And Carlos, you're a traveler. Jason, you're a traveler. You guys understand. I have the win in Rome mentality. Like, yes, if I go
win in Jamrock.
Win in Jamrock, right? I have
always rum punch. Of,
yeah. when you're somewhere, I love talking to the locals. Hey, what do you guys drink? What do you guys eat? Like, put me on. I don't want to be the tourist. And so I'm like, all right, I'm in Jamaica and it's all rum punch. I'm going to drink all rum punch. I'm a tequila guy. But like when I went to Puerto Rico, same thing. We drink rum. And so I drank rum. And so it was all rum punch. And from the time that the ceremony started to the after party, I probably had 8-ish rum punches. Now,
measure I'm that in big, gallons. How many gallons is that? What's a rum punch? How big is that serving? Is it like
the cups
like
were
this big?
Oh, the cups like were at least
wow.
12 to 16 ounces.
Okay. Wow.
And so I'm a large dude. Well, that
was my first thought when you started telling this story, because you are not in a bad way, in a very
no,
in,
for sure.
Way. You're a sizable guy.
But this is what happened. This is what you don't think about. You're in Jamaica. It's like, and you guys know, it's like living in Miami times two. It was 90 degrees, outdoor wedding, outdoor reception. Not only is it hot, it's humid. Your body, even if it's not crazy, it has been perspiring since I got to Jamaica. So that alcohol is going to hit a little bit different than it would hit in mainland USA.
And you're dehydrated. You've been dancing. You're a human cocktail shaker.
Yes.
You're a human cocktail shaker full of alcohol.
Perfect.
You also have Carlos. Probably really no sense of how much of this rum punch man you've had.
I did, but
the math has probably gotten a little blurry.
No, and I was just like, I'm gonna keep going because it's how many times did your best friend get married? Like, we're gonna have a great time. All my friends were there. It was a great time. But after the after party, it was a great night. I take my driver comes gets me. I go back to my resort. Upon arrival, or actually in the drive back, I say, you know what? I might have had one too many rum punches.
Oh, no. He starts the internal monologue. Like,
how strong am I? Nah, man, I'm strong, man. We're going to make it here.
Not today, I'm
like,
buddy.
The word, pull the Mark Jackson. Not today, buddy. You look yourself in the mirror. Get to the resort, make it out safe, pay my driver, walk to my room, grab the water because I'm like, yeah, I'm going to need this. Got to the room, opened the door to that coolness of air conditioning, which you need in Jamaica. And then I say, is it coming? And I try to lay down. Yeah. I laid down.
Oh boy.
And then I said, nah, it's coming up.
Mouth getting watery. Mouth starting to get like, watery.
You forfeited.
You get the spins, but your stomach is just like, I swear, if we take one more step.
Yep.
This is all over.
You're just like time to crawl across the room and take that out.
So I had the wherewithal to get up, and this is a total Russ Dorsey move. Get up, grab the trash can. I put a pillow down, and I just go, "All right, here we go." In three,
you got comfortable.
Yeah, I knew what time it was, Carlos.
The pillow. That is a pillow that I have not heard.
All right,
that man got comfortable.
He said,
"We're gonna be here for a while."
One, and then projectile in, but directed it into the trash can. I said, nope, here comes another one. Ugh. And me and Jason, we're the same because we both have the violent vomit. We don't do it often, but we do.
It sounds
we
like you're it. Screaming.
Yeah.
Yeah. So did somebody call security murdered. On you? Or
yeah. And so then I give one more. So we do three rounds. And then I say, actually, bro, pretty good now.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I tie it up put another bag, tie that up, double bag it, put it outside the door. I apologize to the maid, but I did tip because I know that's probably rough.
Tip big.
And so then got up the next day and felt fine, but I did throw up.
First time since when, do you think?
Another moment like that, actually twice in a year. Because my other really good friend's wedding in Miami in December, we had just a good time.
Completely learned.
You're allergic to tropical weather, I think. I think tropical weather
tropical alcohol.
Yeah. I love the part of that story, and this is so Russ Dorsey. This is completely on brand to me, that you threw up very neatly and professionally.
Yes.
That's just like my 13-year-old daughter does that too. Like if she's going to throw up, she will do it in the least inconvenient way possible for you. I took her to the whole show on vomiting, but I took her to a Hawks game a couple months ago, and I don't know if it was the chicken tenders she ate or what. We were having a great time, but then on the drive home, not far from home either, she got carsick. And they had given out at the game. It was around St. Patrick's Day. They had given out. It was probably that weekend we saw you, Carlos, in the city. They had given out these green and white St. Patrick's Day colored bucket hats. And they were really crappy. They were like plasticky. There was no design. Not something you'd ever wear, even in a pinch.
Even at the game.
I was at the game or in my backyard gardening and no one would see, I wouldn't wear it. It's uncomfortable. For whatever reason, we took these home. Didn't throw them away. And it's a bucket hat, which is very appropriate here because we're about 10 minutes from our house and Grace is in the passenger seat and goes, "Dad, you have one of those hats that we got at the game?" I'm like, yeah, I think that's one down there at your feet. And she goes, "Okay," picks it up right into the bucket hat.
Fantastic.
That is great. That's great. I'm going to finish it up by just saying my dog is well-trained too. Like he gets up and he goes towards the door and he stays away from the carpet, which I appreciate. And then, of course, he wakes us up with the requisite rock, 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 which we've seen on TikTok is a fantastic alarm. You should everybody's alarm, morning alarm, should be the sound of their dog throwing up.
It'll get you out of bed. Yeah. We had a friend who would get carsick very often. Very close family friends was with us a ton. Would get carsick very often and was the opposite of you, Russ. Where there was one time. And there were a lot of incidents close to this, but there was one time this kid's car sick. My dad's trying to get us back to the house. We get to the house. My dad parks. This kid is in the passenger seat, opens the door, and then turns his head back into the floor of the car.
No.
That's right, except the end.
Fumbled at the goal line.
Oh, exactly.
Fumbled at the goal line.
Before this gets worse.
Go ahead.
It was the Leon Lett of throwing up. Yes, Carlos. Absolutely. There was clear window to just do it. Literally an open door to the outside world and then boom, back into the floorboards. Welcome to Sports Adjacent. Thank you for sticking with us through to this point. I'm Jason Leisure with my co-host, Russ Dorsey.
Hello.
Has it been like 3 weeks since we've been together on here? It's been very hit and miss lately. And we'll get into that in a minute.
Yeah, I haven't seen you since... mid-May, because you were off the week my socials broke.
That's a bad thing that happened. Your socials broke,
but it was good. It was good though.
Well, you mean about the Negro League stats in Major League Baseball? Okay.
Yes,
You broke that, right? I didn't see that anywhere else. First, yeah, that was amazing.
Well, we'll talk about that. We'll talk about that in a second. Let me just make sure everyone knows they should know that voice by now. Carlos Frias in with us from Miami, he's been multiple times. Yes, absolutely.
Always happy to be here.
Go ahead, Carlos. I haven't heard the details on how Russ broke that story.
Yeah, that was really interesting. I remember the scrolling, and it was the first place I saw it. The fact that that Negro League stats are going to be included and collated with the rest of Major League stats, which puts Josh Gibson at the top of the pile at a lot of important statistics. But I thought that was a great get, Russ. Like, how did you pull that off? That you can tell us, because I know you got your secrets. Can't give away.
They had some things in motion. and was able to get that out. And me and Tone talked
yada,
about
yada,
it.
Yada, yada, yada. I broke the story. Habit.
Yeah, there you go.
How long were you working on getting to break this? How about that?
10 days or so. Seven to 10 days. Right. And story drops. It actually leaks before I got it out there, but I still got to like break the important pieces of it. And I had the story done with context and all that mm-hmm. information. But then after that, I'm in Milwaukee covering Cubs Brewers, working on a different story, working on Craig Counsell's return to Milwaukee. And everything starts to just kind of blow up. Next morning, they have me on my video and story on Good Morning America. I did Pat McAfee that day. And so it was crazy, crazy day, crazy week, cool day and cool week. But I haven't seen you since before all that happened. So, there you go.
Before everything changed. So you're like
before
a different
life
guy.
Before life changed. Yeah, no. Same
growing up at weddings. And
same Russ. But no, I that might be a reason I did go all out at that wedding, because I'm like, it's been such a crazy time. Let me just enjoy.
I'm sure there were people there who were like, isn't that the guy? Is that the guy that broke the Negro League's old time stats story? He's looking a little woozy.
Yeah, he doesn't look okay. Get that guy a bucket hat.
The ESPN guy is throwing up. Oh man.
What of those stats did you have a chance to kind of really look at that and see, with like aside of Josh Gibson, that's the one that stood out in my head. But I've been thinking about players like Satchel Paige, and then I think of like Negro League players that came from Latin America, you know, like guys that played there. Like, were there any other stats that moved that really caught your attention, whether it was pitching or anything like that?
Chicago guy, Manny Meñoso.
Huge. He's a Cuban ball player.
Yes.
And first, is he the first player of color ever for the White Sox?
Yes.
I think so.
And a guy who most Latino players, if you talk about, say, that's our Jackie Robinson. He jumped almost 200 hits, which took him over 2,000 for his career. That's a feat, right? 2,000 career hits is amazing. Satchel has about 100, and I think it's 124 career victories now. Yeah, I think you go up and down and you're like, wow, this is really cool. And I think the coolest part is like you see guys like Satchel Paige and Josh Gibson, cool Papa Bell, these guys get their just due. Manny Meñoso, who actually got the opportunity to play in the big leagues as well. Those guys get their just due, but also guys that aren't the legends that we knew about. And I think that's the coolest part. Like guys who, because of the time we lived in, didn't get the popularity and notoriety of the others. And so I think that's a good part of the story. And I think at the end of the day, it's allowed people to just say, hey, let me look a little bit more into Negro Leagues history.
It's also like baseball nerds were, you know, become so familiar with MLB stats over the years, but a lot don't look at that aren't familiar, like you said, with the Negro League stats. So it's like a whole new world of like statistics to look into and break down. And,
right.
You know, who knows? Yeah, you know, I'm sure it won't be long before we'll see like modern metrics applied to some of those old numbers, to those Negro League numbers too, and which is probably going to be really interesting to look at.
My big takeaway from yours and other people's coverage from this was that this was not a public relations stunt. This was very, very legitimate and justifiable and done very carefully, in the sense that they did throw out some games that they had some records of, but not a complete record of that. I think there was a situation where maybe it would have added to Willie Mays' numbers, but they could not completely verify everything from the complete game. So it was thrown out. But that these were major league quality players playing a lot of times, not just in major league level facilities, but in the actual major league facilities.
Yeah.
That they would play in the off days or off times in major league ballparks. So everything about this was about, there was every justification for including these statistics.
The part that really blew my mind, I think that people don't know, and I watched a documentary about this. It's on PBS now, I think, about the Negro Leagues. It's a short doc that you obviously black ball players weren't allowed to play in Major League Baseball, but white players were allowed to play in Negro leagues. Like you did see white players and light-skinned Latino players, you know, who could pass for white playing in those leagues. So that idea that like, oh, they never faced. No, their league was more open. The Negro League was much more open than Major League was. Like it was much more representative of a broad range of races and thus more talents than Major League was. So those people that are like, oh, you can't hold those numbers up. Yeah, you're right. Babe Ruth would have been a lot further down that list, or is now a lot further down that list, I'm sure.
And to your point, Jason, they couldn't use anecdotal evidence. So there's a lot of stuff they're like, we feel like we know that this happened, but to include it in such an important like database, you're like, all right, we need the concrete evidence. So they're trying
to high standard for what qualified.
So they're trying to tie in box scores that they had with research and data that they've gotten with newspaper clippings to like corroborate all these different things. And the conclusion they came up to was like, all right, can't include anecdotal evidence and we can't use exhibitions. So like when the Birmingham Black Barons played the Yankees or the Pittsburgh Crawfords played the Yankees, like you can't include those numbers in there, what they call barnstorming. But you can use what were official league games. All that to say, it was really cool. I'm glad people enjoyed it. I appreciate people sharing and liking and tweeting and retweeting that story. But yeah, so to all that to say, it's been a long time since I've seen you and it's a good
job, man. Good job on that.
Thank you.
Can I take that and kind of look at another collating of talents, two forces coming together, and in this case to face off rather than to come together. And that's, did you see that Joey Chestnut and Kobayashi, like the only two names that you might recognize from competitive eating, are going to do a pay-per-view Netflix event September 2nd. Did you see that? That like broke like just a couple hours ago.
So glizzies? That's awesome.
I'm serious. That just
they doing hot dogs? They doing glizzies?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. So you know, Joey Chestnut got kicked out of an actual league that I'm not making up. Well, Major League Eating.
Yeah.
Because he signed up to eat. Impossible Dogs.
Yeah.
He has a sponsorship deal with them. And so now he's out of the Nathan's hot dog eating contest, which he has won 16 times, including the last 8. And one of the details I caught in this that I was intrigued by was it actually had the money that he's been making off this. I have always wondered how much these guys actually make for doing this to their bodies. And he got paid $200,000 to participate in the hot dog eating contest last year.
That's not and a small amount of money that. For a guy that's just eating hot dogs. Yeah,
make his whole everything in a day. Yeah. Just one crazy day of eating hot dogs. Imagine if they had that for Rum Punch, Russ.
Right. League winner right here.
National championship.
And he had an offer on the table from them for, it was a 4-year deal worth $1.2 million total.
Jeez. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer, right? Money talks.
I imagine that what Impossible is paying him is in the millions. And then this Netflix deal with against Kobayashi is likely in the multi-millions as well because people are going to watch for sure. Good for Joey Chestnut, man. Like you talk about making the most out of your talents.
Yo, get that bag, right? Like at this point,
100%. I
mean, like you've stuck with it. If you've stuck with that competition, that's a sport, whatever.
It's a sport.
Yes, it is a physical feat. You've stuck with it for 16 years, and now you're finally getting your pay. Dude, either Nathan's got money. They could easily have matched and doubled whatever he's making with Impossible Foods or whatever. But honestly, like, I kind of want to see that matchup now.
I'm watching.
I'm watching that Kobayashi and...
And I think the hot dog eating contest is grotesque, by the way. Like, I just get sickened on 4th of July.
Yeah, that's going to be the next time you throw up is just watching that.
I'm surprised I haven't. But it's just like you're dipping, they're breaking hot dogs and dipping in the water. Just scarf, scarf, scarf.
Like a pelican.
Yum, yum, yum. Just throwing it down. It's crazy. You know, they're jumping up and down to get it down. Oh.
I'm going to amend my statement and say, I'm looking forward to knowing who wins. I'm not looking forward
to
seeing
it. Yeah, I'll read about it. Yeah.
Because when you watch it, it's really, it's hard to watch. It is hard to watch. And they're sweating. They're like Russ in that cab.
Yeah. That cab back to the resort, just sweating. That knowing, cab back to the resort,
sweating.
I didn't until this came up that Joey Chestnut, the hot dog eater, you know, America's hero, had signed a deal with Impossible Foods. And I was thinking, oh, that's so good. I'm so relieved for him because it's those Impossible glizzies got to be better for his body than the actual ones. Like, it can't be worse.
I don't know. I can't. I don't think that statement's been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration.
This is why countries look down on us.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine 100%. If eating was in the Olympics? We would dominate.
Oh, my God, no. America would be like the 92 Olympic basketball team, the American dream team.
Cinnamon rolls, got it. Glizzies, got it. Pizza,
although
got
Kobayashi.
Get in my belly.
You know, I'm down with Kobayashi. You know, yeah, it's hard to root against Joey Chestnut, but I'm going to be excited to know the outcome of that.
A lot of sports talk so far on Sports Adjacent. Sports Too Adjacent much. Is brought to you. Does the hot dog eating count? I think it does. I think that's.
Yeah, I think it's a sport.
Sports Adjacent, our sports talk, our glizzy talk, all our talk is brought to you by Sheets and Giggles. I'm just going to say glizzy as many times as I possibly can during this.
As one should.
Go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Take advantage of their June sales. Including their Father's Day sale will still be going at the time you get this. You know, you're going to get this 2 days before Father's Day, this episode, and it's going to be a little on the late side, but you could order it for your dad, tell him it's on its way. He's still going to be happy. Take advantage of all their sales that they're always doing in June, but also if you use our link, sheetsgiggles.com/SA, they'll throw on a little extra discount for you at checkout just for our listeners. Go to sheetsgiggles.com/SA. Sports Jason is also brought to you by BetMGM. You can go to BetMGM.com or download the BetMGM app. And your first bet with BetMGM gets paid back in free future betting credits up to $1,500 if you don't win. Promo code ADJACENT1000 is how you get that deal. You can bet on the NBA Finals right now. Well, we're recording this as Game 3 is going to happen, so we don't know where things stand, but there'll be at least one more game when you hear this. You can bet on that at BetMGM with promo code ADJACENT1000. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
I wanted to ask you guys something. Carlos, this is kind of a double-sided question for Carlos because you have kids, and Russ because you don't have kids, but you are the kid to your parents who might be doing this. Carlos, are there things that your kids have been trying to get you to do to be less of an old man? My kids, for example, are 10 and 13, and they're my daughters. They're huge into, they've just in the past probably year gotten into all this skincare stuff, and they are all about like, Dad, you need to do skincare. Dad, you need to do this. And I actually think I do okay. I think I do above average for the typical guy, at least for guys I know. I go to the dermatologist once a year.
That was
which,
great.
Which, by the way, you got to do that. You got to.
That's
do
already.
That.
You want to talk about more things, than like
things you try to get your parents to do? I was the other day trying to get my dad to like, hey, you need to go once a year. Like you're out there playing golf all summer. Get checked. Like I think it's free or close to free if you have decent insurance. I don't pay anything for it because it's very effective preventative. But when I go. Once a year, my dermatologist always gives me a shopping list of good skincare products in general to look better. And you know, you still have to keep trying even when you're married. You know, my pool of women is down to one, but you know, I still got to try.
Yeah, things can get ugly there.
I'm still trying to look good. Yeah. So my 10-year-old daughter is like, Dad, she's rifling through the list of things that the dermatologist recommended in the samples. Dad, I'm going to make you a skincare routine. I'm like, okay, all right, sure. And it's just like, it's like a 5-step process every night. And I that's only going to last maybe about through yesterday, I think.
Well, I will say my kids have given me up for a lost cause, because at this age where they are now, they're like teenagers, and one is going to be 21 soon. Like they're off in their own lives, and dad is just like a wrinkled hunk that just, you know, okay. that just exudes credit card numbers. Like that's
hilarious.
For the most part where I'm at with that. But I was going to say, I bet I do have a skincare routine myself, because I live in Florida and I'm getting baked by the sun all the time. So it's like probably in the last few years, well, in the last maybe 10 years, like sunblock is number one. Like if you do nothing else, America, and you're hearing this, is just put on sunblock, and that will remove like 90% of your physical breaking down.
That's not necessarily, I mean, there is the benefit that will help you look better, but that's like, we're trying to keep you alive, giving you that advice, trying to help you.
Yeah. Both those things, they go hand in hand. You'll make a nice corpse. If you die from something else, you can die from something else. But I use retinol at night for fine lines, and I use vitamin C on my face, and then sunblock in the mornings, and then I moisturize. So in between, and I was going to say, I bet because light-skinned guys get away with not using any moisturizer or anything for the most part. You look down at your legs in the right light, you can see you're a little ashy. But I'm betting Russ has a good skincare routine or habit because you're darker skin.
In the black community, you can't get away with not being moisturized because people will talk about you. Can't be ashy.
Since this is an audio platform, just everyone, Russ is black.
If they don't know 171 episodes in, that's hilarious.
I imagine somebody right now like,
what? Russ is black? Keep taking this out of my subscription.
That would be the worst reaction.
3 years in.
I was just picturing mild surprise, not, you know, what have I... Yeah,
no, that's okay.
Until right now, we had Steve Bannon as a listener, but now you've ruined it.
Done for.
David Duke unfollowing.
I've always been really good about skincare, even back to like eighth grade into high school. And I think that's helped me significantly as I had gotten older, because my skin, every makeup artist I've ever had says you have maybe the best skin I've ever seen on a guy before.
Oh, what a nice compliment.
It's a super huge compliment because they see lots of skin. But the part that why I take it super serious now is when you're putting makeup on your face every day for TV, and you sweat, and I go to the gym a ton, so you have sweat and salt and all that on your face too. Like being really proactive in keeping your face clean. So I'll wash my face in the morning and at night before I go to bed. Retinol, toner, moisturizer, bed. So I think it's important. It doesn't take that long. It literally takes like 3 minutes, the whole shebang. And you'll keep your skin looking healthy for longer. That's why guys actually look younger now than like our parents' generation. Like our parents' generation, you had dudes like 25 that looked like they were 50. Now,
that's a good observation.
You know what I mean?
Good observation.
Super leathery ass skin, just tough. And because you got smoking packs a day back then.
Right.
Now we little ugh when people are smoking.
Your face looks like a dirty baseball mitt.
Like
you're 27.
You now see 50 and 60 year old guys. You're like, oh man, that guy just looks pretty good. So yeah. I do think as we get into different generations, new generations, as we realize how important taking care of your skin is, I think you're going to see guys particularly look younger and younger, because for a long time it's like, oh, you take care of your skin, that's gay. It's like, it's gay to want nice skin. Okay.
And also, if you're gay, you're like, thanks.
Right.
I appreciate that.
Now we're like, all right, we got the ignorance out of there. It's like, oh, it's just not important to have nice skin. Got it.
I don't know. I look at my replies and there's still plenty of ignorance in there.
But lots of ignorance out there.
In the comment section, it's like 100% ignorance.
Russ, is there anything that you've been trying to get your mom and dad to do or dress or anything that they just like, they just do not, they have no time for this?
No, nor do I have
time. They listen to you?
Yeah. Well, I'm a good kid.
What have you gotten them to do? I was trying to get my dad to get some better shoes and stop buying them at Costco. And that's a
that does, no, dads will always, oh man, I found these on sale. They're going to get them. It doesn't matter. That's a good dad thing. Yeah.
Costco.
I got that's my
dad shops for clothes.
Dad to stop saying certain things. And like my dad's a pastor, so he's not, my dad doesn't swear or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But like you, when you're in different generations, you say different things.
I got you. Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, Dad, you probably shouldn't say this anymore. Not as instead of probably, yeah, you shouldn't. And like, then they slowly start to, you start to hear it less and less where they don't say certain words anymore. And I'm like, ah, you care.
Success.
I appreciate that. Success.
You're protecting your dad against cancellation. That's
well, and I told my dad, I'm like, Dad, tough. if you're out here and you say something where you get canceled, it comes back on me. So it's kind of selfish.
Ah, there it is.
Who's going to cancel your dad, though?
This is the best man speech all over again. No, okay. He's worried about it coming back on him. Right, that's what he's worried about.
It doesn't matter if my dad gets canceled.
Give me some viral video of his dad saying something. Now Russ is out
by association. You know what I mean? That happens, unfortunately, in our world.
You know what I got my folks to do as when I was a kid was seatbelts. My parents did not.
Yeah.
I'm almost 50. That, my parents, that generation did not wear seatbelts, Russ. The seatbelts in my car when I was a kid growing up, like in the back seat, I remember digging my hands between the cushions behind me and being like, what is this thing? I have never seen this device used. And I remember like going to school and hearing from like, you know, firefighters and stuff, you should wear your seatbelts. And they gave us the stats. And I came home and I was the annoying kid. They got my parents wearing seatbelts, and they were in car accidents later where they had seatbelts in it. Like maybe if not saved their lives, it certainly kept them from getting more hurt, you know?
But it is a good accomplishment. That seems obvious now, but it really wasn't back then. And I remember watching.
So does sunscreen, right?
Yes. And not smoking and things like that.
Not smoking. Yeah.
I remember watching Mad Men when that was big. I loved that show, but he's always driving around. This is in the 60s, and he's always driving around in his car, you know, smoking and drinking while he's driving. The kids are just kind of rolling around side to side in the back.
Jostling.
Right.
Heads bouncing off the window.
Mad Men was great. I always remember seeing where they had a picnic in the park, and when they're done, he just crumples up his can of Coke and throws it into the lawn. Just throws further
there's
into Central Park.
Too, yes.
Yeah. Littering, it was crazy. Like you watch that and it's kind of it takes you out.
I'm you know, still trying to get
about
my
skincare.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. You were gonna say
trying to get my grandfather to wear a seatbelt, and he's 80 now and he's so against doing this.
Yeah,
he's so determined not to do this, even though I've had several conversations where I've been like, look, man, just wear a seatbelt, it'll keep you alive. And he's like, okay, you're right. But then he doesn't. He's crafty like this. He somehow bought from a car dealer or somebody just the buckle that could go into the thing in his car. So then it won't beep when he's, you know, like how it dings until you put your seatbelt on.
That's sick.
I'm like, how is that less work than just wearing a seatbelt?
No, that is like the kids who turn on the water in the bathroom and they never get under the shower.
Yeah, or brush your teeth. Yeah.
Yeah, like they let the water run and it's like, you've already gone to that effort. Just get under it.
Uh-huh. Just,
you're already in there for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
What are you doing in
there?
You
come in later and you're like, why is this soap bone dry, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, this towel totally dry.
This soap's literally got dust on it.
You know, you mentioned skincare and I thought of something else, of something I saw in a GQ article this month, which was a lot of guys are doing like steroids and or HGH or some
TRT.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Like so I've not read that article.
Testosterone replacement therapy,
which is just another way of saying using HGH or steroids, right? Like it's we call it hormone or testosterone replacement, right? But I'm thinking like, you know, my baseball background, obviously I'm like, steroids. But then you always think like, you know, you do lose certain whatever. You get old and certain chemicals in your body go down.
That tea goes down.
Yeah, right. And sometimes the tea goes down and it causes
everything
other gravitational forces to take effect on parts of the body. And I wonder, like, are we maybe at the point, I'm sure there's people who are still abusing things like that, but I'm certainly getting to the point where I'm thinking like, all right, science has come away. Like, should I be doing something that will keep me feeling healthy? You know, whether it affects the potential for depression or, you know, brittle bones or weakness or whatever, you know, it has me thinking about, you know, the whole thing about thinking about health. It has me thinking about all these things that we traditionally have kind of just swept under the rug in one way and just kind of looking at it kind of from a different angle, you know? And I don't know, was that something that you guys have seen or thought about it, you know, especially since you're around athletes all the time, you know?
I look at it differently than I separate the two of athletes doing it and like normal average Joe's doing it. Cause I work out a lot. So I have a lot of that in my Instagram feed. And guys talk about being on, you know, TRT and having testosterone replacement therapy. And one guy today said, he's a bodybuilder. And he said, look, I lifted naturally until I got to 38. And at 38, I was tired. I could not put on muscle mass like I did in my 20s. And I just needed a little boost. And he said, now I have energy and I'm in as good a shape I've ever been in. And I feel good. And so to me, it's just like, I look at it kind of like women look at plastic surgery. And I don't want to just necessarily put that to women because dudes get surgery too. I get that. But like where you say, well, I'm doing it so I feel good. I think for dudes, especially you're like, you get older, you get a love handle here. You can't put on muscle. It's harder to lose weight. And you're like, well, testosterone and it has other health benefits, as you alluded to, Carlos. I don't see that being the equivalent of like Barry Bonds, Sammy, Mark McGuire. But I think to your point, I think as science gets better with keeping people healthy with that, because I think that's always been the big concern is just like, all right, you see guys dropping from doing all these crazy steroids. But I think testosterone is that something that's in your body naturally anyway, as opposed to some of these anabolic steroids, things like that.
You know, I think about, it's funny, I was just having, I was listening to the Levitard show and they quoted this crazy stat about Barry Bonds. If you take out his 7 MVP seasons, the guy's numbers are still.
He still has like, over 400 homers and over 300 stolen bases and nobody has done it.
Right. Yeah. And I remember thinking like, having been a baseball voter, like I had that vote for 7 years. I think all but the first year that I had it, I voted for him because here's what I thought. Again, we're very, very sport heavy today, but MLB could have stopped it. They knew about it. They could have stopped it. And instead they put it all on the writers and said, no, here, you guys decide. We don't know. You guys be the bad guys. It's like, dude, we're just out here. We catch them, you know, we catch sight of them and cover them in this tiny, narrow window. And you're asking us to decide their legacy, you know, and it always rang as such a cop out that I was like, you know what? I voted for all those guys. I voted for all those guys because it wasn't my job. That wasn't my job to legislate that away. And I the Levitard, you know, they posted something on social media about it. And I was like, put them in the hall yesterday. And it's, you know, I just mentioned that because it's getting like, you know, lots of like likes and the amount of people that are against that versus the kind of people that I saw against it, you know, even 10 years ago, which kind of, I think is when he was first 11 years ago, I think is when he was first eligible. Those numbers have totally shifted. And I felt like if he'd been on the ballot a couple years longer, like if it had started later down the road, I think he'd be in. Because he was really close.
Sorry. This is kind of only a little bit related, but it's something I wondered while you were talking about Barry Bonds. Did you ever talk to him much? Did you have a lot of interactions? Horrible.
He was horrible. He was mean. He was
That's his reputation.
When,
yeah.
When he paid attention to you, it was always with a smirk or a snide look or talk down, never fully wanting to give an answer that was, that's not why you were asking him. You know what I mean? He was very sarcastic. He was a pill to deal with. I did not enjoy dealing with Barry Bonds, and it still didn't affect my decision about whether I thought he belonged in the Hall of Fame, because I'm sure plenty of people don't like me, you know?
Well, we've talked about that before, about how, you know, your beef with somebody you cover, no one cares about it but you two. Everyone else wants you to cover that person objectively. But the reason I asked what he was like is because that is what exactly what you described is exactly what his reputation was. Yet every time in his post-playing career that I've seen him on TV interviewed, he seems like the happiest, most pleasant man I have ever seen.
Don't got to lie anymore.
Yes, yeah. He could not look happier and more comfortable talking to people.
And lame.
Or he's a guy who, as in baseball, when he was playing, he did what it took to be successful at it. And I think maybe that's, he's like, if I want to be on TV, nobody's going to have sour, burly guy, a dour, you know, guy on TV. Nobody wants to see that. So he does what it takes. I mean, he was a terrible hitting coach, they'll tell you, because he had not transitioned away from being that. I mean, he had to work with people, and he was not wanting to do that. But on TV, I'm sure that he's better about that. But I remember he hit a home run. I think I want to say it was number 600 in San Francisco. And then they played a series in Atlanta, like the very next, maybe the next day or that weekend. And I had talked to Hank Aaron, who told me, I think I've had the record long enough. And if Barry's going to break it, I support him and I hope he does. And I'm really supportive. And very classy guy. And I got him, you know, one-on-one, and it was great. I had like this thing. And so I went up after him after a game, or maybe it was before the game, really early, you know, before they really start getting serious about getting ready. And I just told him, hey, Barry, I'm so-and-so, you know, from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, Carlos Frias. I just wanted to ask a question. You know, I talked to Hank Aaron, and he, after you hit number 600, you know, he said that he's really pulling for you to break it. And I was just wondering, you know, how you feel about that, about hearing a guy who's a hero to a lot of people kind of support you like that publicly. And he just looked at me and shook his head, and he goes, sorry, I already talked about that after I hit it. You should have been there when I hit it. And I was like, well, I'm in Atlanta and you're in San Francisco. And he's like, sorry. And he went back. And that typified every interaction that I had with Barry Bonds. And so maybe if the cameras were differently, if they happened to get them on him, they were a little bit better. But, you know, he was not a pleasant guy to cover. He did not treat you like a human being. He did not offer you that respect, even if you did the same. That said, one of the great ball players, and he should be in the Hall of Fame, in my opinion.
Russ, we need to talk about our show, actually. Yeah, we need to talk about our show.
Do you want me to do it? You want to do it?
No, I'll do it. It's okay.
Okay.
I'll
jump in when necessary.
Yeah. It will be necessary. This has been a great run for Sports Adjacent, but we are wrapping it up at the end of this month, and totally wrapping it up on a good note for me. I feel like this has been an awesome run, 3.5 years. What are we going to have, 173 episodes
plus shows
at the end? And it just feels like the right time to both of us. Nothing's wrong. Everything's cool. In fact, that was one of the things that it didn't even really come up when Russ and I were talking about this until the end. I pointed out, like, I think it's great that people always tell you don't do business with your friends because that's dicey. There's a lot of conflicting interests in that, and you can lose a friendship over stuff like this. And I think it's great. We defied that. We went 3.5 years, and we are at a point now where we can walk away from this really happy with each other. No issues. It's just It's just the right time in a lot of ways. And one of them being, and we can get into some of the reasons for you guys, because I know you guys will want to know that. If you think back to when this started, that was a long time ago, man.
The world was different.
3.5 years ago, our worlds were a lot different. You might notice you don't hear Tony as much on here. And while this is mine and Russ's show, Tony's a huge part of that. And Tony has taken on a lot more job commitments since then. Russ's career has skyrocketed, really, and taken off in a lot of different ways that demand his time since then. We're at a point where it's increasingly difficult to get together for a show once a week. And while we love all the guests we have, like Ken Davis and Carlos Frias, we weren't intending to have them as quite as often as we have. Some of that has been by design. We've wanted to have these people part of it. And some of it has been, we're in a little bit of a pinch here and we need to find a third person on the microphone because Tony's out or Russ is out. And it's just become increasingly difficult to put a show together every week when we have other responsibilities, other jobs, other life responsibilities. And it just feels like the right time to me, Russ, to say, this has been a great success. We're really happy with it. I'm thrilled with the content that we've put out and how we've grown. Man, from those first 10 episodes to the way things roll now, so much better. And it's put money in the hands. The show has made some money, I'll tell you that. Like, we're not rich because of this, but it's put money in hands of people that I care a lot about, including you, Russ. This has put money in Russ's hands, Tony's hands, Herb Howard, Dion Miller, Caitlin Sharkey, Carlos Frias, all these people that I care about and am very happy about doing that, but also really happy about, I don't think there's anybody on our show, anybody that's ever been on our show that we have quote unquote given a platform to. All these people have their own thing going on. All these people were successful and had a platform independent of any of this before we started. But Russ, one thing I'm really proud of is we have given all of these people a different platform than what they had, a way to showcase their personality in a way that NFL Network isn't really looking for them to do if they work there, or ESPN or wherever. We have brought people into a sphere where they can really be themselves and you can really get to know them.
I know people are probably listening like, what? And I'm very happy because that means we did something that people appreciated for 3.5 years. Mm-hmm. And there is not a day that goes by that I don't have the most fun in the world on this podcast. I think people have learned a lot about you on this pod. I think a lot people have learned a lot about me on this pod. I think my parents have learned a lot about me on this podcast.
That's scary.
They're two of the biggest supporters of it. I think about all the people who have been there since the beginning that listen, that appreciate all the different things that we did and have been able to do. And yeah, like Jason mentioned, I think we're just at a point in life where we have to do it. You know, I think you look at Tony, when we started this podcast, Tony was single, a single dude. And 3.5 years later, Tony is married with a child. Jason,
Tony was on here at the beginning telling stories about disaster dates.
Right.
Now I saw him Sunday at his baby dedication, Tony Gill, khakis and collared shirt, walking through church with a diaper bag.
Yeah, like that's happened in the last 3.5 years. Like, you have been raising 3 children over the last 3.5 years and covering what was like maybe one of the worst organizations in sports. But your life will be busier now because there is a new heir apparent to the throne, or a new heir to the throne that might actually be really good. And so that even jumping on today is just like, it's a lot going on. For me personally, going from being on the beat to being a national guy to being on TV every day, like, that is something that is a lot of fun, but it also takes a lot out of you. And I 100% believe that the scheduling part of this has been the most difficult part. It's never been about, oh, I'm not getting paid what I think I deserve. Like, none of that is important. I remember the first day that Jason and I talked about this. He's like, I don't care what happens. Like, this part will always get taken care of. And I believe him because that's the type of stand-up guy he is. But I just think that, you know, sometimes life's. And I think it's a good time for us to say, you know what? We can go out on top. We can go out our way and just say thank you over the last couple of episodes to all the people that were there for us. I think of Kara Hoyer, who loves our podcast and has been a big supporter of ours, who appreciates everything that we do. And I'm grateful to all the people who are listening to us right now that wanted us to succeed at this. And I think the fact that Lawrence gave us an opportunity 3.5 years ago to do something different and to have 170 plus episodes of back catalog that are hilarious and we can go back and listen to, and you can go back and listen to. But like you said, like all the different people we've had on from different walks of life, from different jobs and different professions, people who you didn't know were really funny that are hilarious, right? Mm-hmm. I think that's the part for me that I will always appreciate and love about this podcast. And so, yeah, it's something that is bittersweet because something that we put a lot of effort and energy and time and love into is going away. But I also am very happy because I'm proud of what we've been able to build over the last 3.5 years. And I'm proud of me, Jason, and Tone being able to put our best foot forward on a project together. I'm proud that me and Jason were great friends and able to go in on a business together and have it be successful at every turn, to be honest with you. Like, we had a lot of stuff. We're blessed to have a lot of stuff go our way. And that doesn't always happen for podcasts. So, bittersweet day, but I could not be walking away more proud of everything we put out there.
I agree with all that. It just feels complete to me. We're just like peeking behind the curtain here, behind the scenes for us. We're small. We are a small business, both in terms of people. The full number of full-time employees at Sports Adjacent LLC is 2.
Me and Russ. Right.
And we are profitable, but we are not, you know, McAfee.
This is not our Levitar first job. This is not our first job.
Right. but we are very well run as a very, very small business.
We're a good organization. And
I can tell you,
we're the Pittsburgh Steelers of podcasting.
We have the money. Like, one of our principles in this all along was make sure we have set aside enough money, make sure we have enough money that we could always operate for another year if not another dime comes in. We are in that position financially right now. We could do this financially for at least another year without taking a loss if we didn't have any advertising or distribution or any of that, which we do have. So I'm very proud of that. And that is not at all the rationale behind doing this. It just really, to me, as a creative project, feels complete. But as a business, and I've never been part of running or owning a business before this, I'm also really proud, Russ, of something that we said from day one is every single person that you have ever heard on this show got paid for their time. Not one person has ever appeared on the show for free. And many have offered, by the way. Everybody we have on is one of the two of our friends or someone that Tony brings in. Plenty of people have kind of almost fought us on it and said, don't send me that. And we said, no, we do this. We don't pay a ton because this is not a highly profitable thing, but we are paying every single person that works here. And if you don't want the check, then donate it or something, whatever. But we're paying everybody that works on the show.
Something that, another peek behind the curtain. We don't say that because we just did something. As two guys that are in media and are often asked for our time
for free,
very rarely do you get paid for that. And we said, you know what? We're asking a lot of people's time, people who are busy, people who have a lot going on and are giving us their time off the love of us as their friends. we don't want to abuse their time or take their time for free. So we wanted to build a model of guests where it's like, hey, thank you, but also a token of our appreciation. And so I think that's awesome. I think that's a great thing to live by. I think more businesses should do that, but that's just me. But yeah, I think to your point, I think one of the cool parts about this is we were able to take our real life experience. And because of that, and because of things we had seen and experienced, we wanted to do better for our friends, for all the people that graced us with their presence, like Carlos. And you got to meet really cool people, and you got to hear people like people I didn't think Dion Miller cussed. Dion Miller was on here cussing. That's great.
People got to hear Dion Miller on here doing Anchorman.
Yeah.
You not seeing that on Channel 7 ABC News in Chicago.
Right. So now it's what we built was beautiful and awesome. And I want to say thank you to everybody out there, even though we have a couple episodes left. Can't say thank you enough. I'll probably say thank you every episode. And I usually try to do that for 170 plus episodes at the end, just because like I don't take for granted that. Listen, most podcasts don't make it to episode 10. Most podcasts don't make a dollar. We've been able to do both. And so that is something that we will always be able to have and be proud of. And I think me and Jason did it together. I think something that he always told me that his kids thought were really cool, that me and him did something together. And I also think that's really cool. So
yeah,
no sadness here, Carlos.
Well, as a recent guest co-host, and as the first voice of the audience hearing this, I'm just going to say I feel like I discovered a cool new bar and now it's closing.
Well, yes, so and it's on us. Our listenership probably feels that way about you too.
Yeah,
because I don't know why it took so late in the game for us to bring you in, because you and I have been friends for so long, and you were an instant hit both with Russ and with our show as a whole and our audience. So sorry, Carlos.
Well, I've enjoyed it. I mean, I've enjoyed every single time that we've been able to do it. I loved getting a chance to co-host a show with Herb, who was hilarious, and getting to know you, Russ. Like, I feel like we literally made friends. We became friends on the podcast, and that's a really rare thing to do in a medium, where you're in Chicago and I'm in Miami, and it feels like now when I go to Chicago or you're here, like we're going to get a beer.
Absolutely.
Or we're going to get some coffee or have lunch or something, you know. No rum punch, but.
No,
but coffee.
Yes.
So congrats to you guys. Let me be the first to say congrats on a great run.
Thank you.
Thanks,
thank you, Tom. Very much. And that is how I feel about it. When you, Russ, said a lot of podcasts don't make it to their 10th episode, I never had specific concrete goals for this of how long it'd go or whatever. It wasn't going to go forever. It wasn't just going to be in perpetuity. Yeah, we're going to be 65 on here talking about how our back hurts or something.
I think you guys are already doing that. I think we did body hurting.
But I did have in my mind as a minimum, I'm like, okay, we got to be committed to push this through for a year. This cannot be something that lasts less than a year. And now you sit here and you're 3.5 years in. And there are a lot of people that we need to thank for this. And we either have or will thank these people personally, but I think they deserve due publicly too. One of the questions I get all the time about any part of my work is about this show, Russ. People will ask, Carlos has asked me when he was thinking about doing something like this, well, how do you do it? What's the secret? Like, how did you guys get this off the ground? And it's like, well, the secret is like be really good friends with a guy who is basically a media mogul in Chicago, in Lawrence Holmes, and have an elite level, elite talent producer available to you who is your friend who will do it at an extremely discounted rate. Like Tony gets paid, but Tony doesn't get paid what his
Tony deserves to get paid
talent
for his talent
is worth. So enormous thank you to Lawrence, who has steered, kind of overseen this and steered the ship on this from before its launch. and also to Tony, who is, we give him a hard time. Tony is a rare, rare talent. And for me, the absolute perfect creative content collaborator, because we just have identical lenses that we look at that through. So the big secret to having a successful podcast like this is just have it be born on third base, because that was pretty much what we did. Not to mention, Russ, when you get into, and like, this is corporate, this is the ad reads you hear and stuff, but we've had companies, we've had sponsors
since day one
that, and we shouldn't have, that no. took that made enormous big bets on us.
Yeah.
Starting with zero listenership, just starting at nothing, assuming that we would deliver. Obvious Shirts was there from day one. Joe over at Obvious Shirts was paying us way more than what the rate should have been for what our show was at the time, you know, just starting out. That was a bet for him that came through, by the way. We've come through for our sponsors repeatedly.
Oh, let me say, by the way, because I you're doing a great job being humble. I'm going to put my meat on the table a little bit. Our meat, collective meat for SA.
All right.
We're really damn good at this.
Mm-hmm.
Let me say it again. We're really damn good at this, and we're not stopping the show because we're not good at it. All right. I just need to get that out.
That's it. Well, on that note, probably the biggest.
We're really damn good at this, Jason Leisure.
Thank you. Yes.
I feel like that needs applause. All right. I'm just going to do finger snaps.
No, I'm being facetious to make a point. I think Jason is very humble. And he tends to be the way I operate too, and Tone, but we're a really good team. And we went from being dudes that have never podcasted to being really good at podding. And I think if everything aligned, we could do another 170 episodes. It's just not where this lines up. And that's okay. But I don't ever want it to not be said that we're really damn good at this.
I think it has been said and will continue to be said, yes. You can just drop in with that anytime you want. All right,
I just wanted the permission.
There's some opportunities here for you to do that, because I am grateful to all the sponsors we've had, Connect Roasters, BetMGM, BetUS. But there have been some that have been great to us, and we have been our listeners, and we, Russ and I, have been, and Tony, have been great to them. And Obvious Shirts kind of making that bet up front on us and then us delivering for them. Homage, you brought up Homage, and this is where you can drop how good we are.
Hey, we're really damn good.
Homage is an enormous company and has been for a long time, and had never partnered with a podcast ever.
Mm-hmm.
And
tell Travis and Jason.
Well, through some meetings, we did that. We did pitch them a ton of good ideas, pitched them plans that they liked so much that they, a very big and successful clothing company, wanted to work with us and make us kind of their first step into this world of working with a podcast. And it was very successful for us. I loved working with Homage. Very, very successful for them. They made money on it because our audience was totally into it. And they have great stuff. They have awesome shirts. I have like 15 of their shirts now.
Big thing.
In my dresser. They have taken a lot of what we talked to them about a couple of years ago and applied it to New Heights. Kelsey brothers?
Jason and Travis Kelsey.
And like we helped them come up with a lot of that game plan.
And you know why? I'm thrilled to see that.
I'm thrilled to see that.
No, 100%. And it's not hate. And
it's awesome to see the validation that we had.
And I love their podcast, but we also love Homage. And the fact that those two things went together and has been so successful, it's like, okay, we get it. But we're glad we had like a small part in that partnership.
That's great validation for me. I mean, I'm not a business person. You are not either, but you're a little more of a business person than me.
I am now, but not back when we were doing that.
Even then you were. One of our first conversations about this, in fact, maybe our very first conversation was me talking to Russ about wanting to do this and all the creative reasons why I needed this as a creative outlet. Because there are things I want to talk about and ways that I want to hang out here that there is no other place for me to do that. Sun Times doesn't want this. Stadium didn't want this. The Score didn't. Nobody, there was no spot for some of what we do here, a lot of what we do here. And I needed something to be able to channel that into. I'd come from Miami. I'd come from being, especially my last year there, regular on Levitard show, and felt like I had that creative outlet there. And then I got here and I'm like, I don't really have that. I need that. And you were the perfect partner for it. And so all of my reasons, every single one of my reasons for doing this was to have a creative outlet and to do something fun. And you said, I love all that. Also, you know, let's put your kids through college on it. And we did fall a little short of that goal. I don't have two kids worth of 4-year tuition out of this at all. But Russ is very much a business person. And that's a long rambling way of saying it was, he doesn't have an MBA or anything like that. And it was very cool for me and him to see that there was this validation of all these ideas that we had for Homage that they have now very successfully applied to a much bigger podcast that they work with. So that was awesome. That's really cool. And probably nobody's been better to us though than Sheets and Giggles.
The best.
Colin McIntosh, Sheets and Giggles has been the ultimate partner for this, both in terms of finance and creative content. They have been all about everything, all of the wildly inappropriate endorsements that Tony Gill has given those Sheets about how they cup your butt so well. They've loved all of that. And that was another one, Russ, where, again, like, you know, if you guys want to know how good these people have been to us and how good we've been for them, they started out with, they had a formula. They are business people at Sheets and Giggles. Colin is a business person. And Colin uses a formula to say, okay, this is what advertising on your show would be worth. This is the price that we calculated out to be the right price. And it was lower than I was hoping for. It was lower than we'd been getting from other places. And I was like, And he said, well, what are you looking for? And I said the number. And it was much higher than what he had said. And he said, all right, let's do it. Let's try it out. Let's try your number out for 3 months. And if we make money off it, then we'll keep going at that. And sure enough, they did. And it's just like they've sent us all these Sheets. They've sent us all this. They've sent it to our guests. Carlos, they sent you some, I know.
They did. They're great.
That have just been awesome for us. And it's been great to work with good people at those companies and companies that have good stuff that we couldn't be more confident or happier than to recommend to you guys. Because if you go on Homage right now, you're going to see awesome stuff that you want. Great t-shirts, great sweats, shorts, all that stuff. And if you buy some Sheets and Giggles, you will thank me later. Like, you will not regret that. It's been awesome to work with these people and these companies.
Absolutely. Super grateful for Colin for believing in us whole time, supporting the podcast. It's just been great. And I'm really happy. I know it probably doesn't sound like it, but like, it, we hadn't told people about it. The only people who knew was Lawrence and Tone, the two of us. And we actually knew a couple weeks before we told Lawrence and Tone.
My parents were not happy.
My parents weren't the most thrilled. Mm-hmm. They understood, though.
Yeah, it's been great. And I already have thought of ideas of something we could do next. I think I want a break. I think I want a little bit of a break, I'm sure when 2025 or late this year comes around, I'm going to be again feeling that itch to do something creative, and maybe it'll be different than this. Maybe it'll be similar to this. I don't know. We have you and I both have such a wide range of people to bring into projects like this. And you've just been the ideal partner in a lot of ways, and a great co-host. And I would totally come up with some new idea that where we work together, where we co-host something again. It just feels like this is complete. It feels like this has, it's cliche. I know I'd say it's run its course or whatever, but this feels like the right time to close this off. So we're going to go for the rest of the month. So you'll get this episode and two more. We'll do our best to get Tony around for those, but you know,
no promises.
Everything else comes first. He's got a baby. Tony might want to do a podcast, and then his baby's like, yo, big dog, I'm going to cry for an hour.
Big dog, sorry.
But thank you guys. You guys have been there with us from the jump, and we're really happy to bring you this episode and through the end of the month. So a million people to thank for this, and just couldn't be happier with how it turned out. Let's do the news. You got to love Aaron Rodgers. Aaron Rodgers, the Jets quarterback who spent part of his offseason, you know, after he didn't play all last year. Not his fault. He got hurt. I do feel for him on that. He didn't play all year, was out in California all year. Then in the offseason says, you know what the Jets really need is to cut all the BS in their building. Which, how would you know?
You,
you weren't even there. Yeah. In fact, you're probably the cause of like two-thirds of this BS, maybe more. After all that, after that offseason, he then skips minicamp. A mandatory minicamp. Not that that's a big deal. Like, he'll be fine. It will not affect, you know, if you're going to draft him in your fantasy league, don't factor that in. But it really is kind of he's kind of doing his coach wrong. And the Jets, Robert Saleh is trying to cover for him, which Aaron Rodgers, I hope, appreciates. Because they're calling it, Robert Saleh is the one that told us all it's an unexcused absence. But then he's saying the next day, hey, we're all on exactly the same page. This is not an issue. The media is making way too much out of this. Well, which I don't agree with. And I would say there has never been more proof than now that Robert Saleh works for Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah, if I have a hobbled old quarterback coming back, from a terrible injury, I want to see a lot of him. I want my staff to see a lot of him. I want to know what condition he's going to be in. And now I actually think that maybe he's got a, like, I don't know, like that guy's been hit one too many times. I don't know. I don't think that he's either he overestimates his fame. And he underestimates how hard it's going to be to probably, he's never had an injury like that.
Well, he overestimates the power of those healing crystals that he found out in New Mexico.
Yeah, exactly. He rubs those all over his face.
Hey, you know what he didn't put on that torn Achilles? Some crystals.
He didn't.
Yeah, they might have implanted a little, I don't know.
Right to the orthopedic surgeon. Yeah, stitch me up, big dog.
Right to the real doctor.
You didn't put a Bill Gates chip in me, did you? Little faith healer. They put leeches all over his body.
I wouldn't be that worried about, you know, wanting to see how he looks and everything. It's just like, this is such a bare minimum level of respect. Don't hang your coach out to dry on this. Show up in New York, show up in New Jersey, wherever they practice, stand around on the sideline even for a couple of days of this mini camp, and don't put your coach and everyone else in the organization in this position where they have to defend and try to cover for you and make it look like you care about this when you clearly don't. He had apparently told, this is in the ESPN story I read, he had apparently told Robert Saleh way in advance that he wasn't going to be able to make that minicamp because he had a previous commitment. He had a previous commitment that was going to keep him out of 2 days of mandatory work at his $60 million a year job. I got a thing that we could. Sorry. Right. Sorry, Bobby. Sorry, Bobbo.
Definitely Bobbo.
Carlos, you remember when we were in our Denzel phase with you?
Oh yeah, I love that Denzel phase. I went back and I've watched some older. I saw Training Day again, and I was like, I was in a. I think the algorithm got me, so somehow I was exposed to Denzel things. So yeah, I'm feeling that. I saw the Equalizers. Mm. I'm caught up.
Maybe that's our next creative venture, Russ, is the Sports Adjacent LLC Denzel Washington Film Festival.
Denzel Adjacent.
Like Denzel Adjacent would be lit.
Denzel is in. The reason I bring up Denzel is he's in Gladiator 2, which comes out at the end of this year. And the star of the original Gladiator, Russell Crowe, is not happy about Ridley Scott rebooting this story with a sequel that centers around Maximus's grandson. Here's what Russell Crowe had to say about it.
And now,
Carlos Frias
reads.
Well, I'm slightly uncomfortable with the fact that they're making another one, you know? Because, of course, you know, I'm dead, and I have no say with what gets done, you know? Couple of things that I've heard, I'm like, no, that's not in the moral journey of that particular character. But, you know, I can't say anything. That's not my place. 6 feet under. So we'll see what that is like.
Love it.
You said something very serious and like, you know, true to the art, but also you sounded like you were doing a commercial for Outback Steakhouse.
I mean, that's that what I just did was Australian for Russell.
Can you say Bloomin' Onion in that?
In the Bloomin' Onion voice? Bloomin' Onion. Bloomin' Onion.
You Kangaroo. Like
Kangaroo Jack.
You probably do a good Australian. You do all these good impersonations, Russ. You probably do a good
Crikey.
Australian accent. Yeah.
Crikey.
Down under.
Holy boomerang.
Just throw every Australian phrase
Bunch
that you can
of
think of. Shrimp that's on the Barbie, right?
That's a
shrimp
wild wallaby.
Shrimp a wallaby. On the
He's like a kangaroo's Joey. That's not a knife.
This is a knife.
You Great. Even know that. Even you know that. That probably, yeah. I'm sure it came out before you were born.
One of my parents' favorite movies.
Crocodile finally, Russ. I think all of Australia really loves that movie, too.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I'm sure he's there. George Washington. Yeah, I'm sure they're thrilled about that. And finally, Russ and Carlos, a man whose truck went off a cliff in Oregon was rescued after his dog traveled 4 miles to get help.
Wow.
Yeah. Authorities in, this is from the Associated Press. Authorities in Baker County, Oregon, say the truck went into a ravine. It was an 85-foot drop. But and with this guy, Brandon Garrett, 61 years old, and his 4 dogs inside, all survived. Spoiler alert, you know, for the end of this story, they all survived. So what happens is this truck is down a steep incline after going off this cliff. Brandon Garrett said later he was driving. He thought he could make a turn, and then he couldn't make the turn. And it wasn't an actual road. It was like a state park type road. This was in a state or national park, like a Forest Service road or something. So the thing goes down. He gets knocked out. He's unconscious. One of his dogs, Blue, who is a – I looked this up because I know the dog people will care about this. A Whippet and Pit Bull mix walks or runs, somehow travels almost 4 miles back to the family's campsite. And then the family, by seeing this dog that, you know, just got in the truck with Brandon Garrett, can tell something's wrong, and they start to go look for him. So that's the whole impetus to him getting rescued. The other 3 dogs were also fine and stayed there with him. This is like an incredible plan by the dogs. Great communication by you three stay here. I'll go get help. Brandon Garrett wakes. They find him the next day, and he has managed to crawl 100 yards out of the truck, but he can't get up the ravine, and he's injured anyway. So they bring in the rescue crew. They've got this elaborate pulley and rope system and a rescue stretcher, and they get him out of there. And after this 85-foot drop off a cliff in his truck, not only are the 4 dogs okay, but Brandon Garrett was airlifted to the hospital, and the only injuries he has are a hairline fracture in one of his feet and some lacerations. He is currently recovering at home.
If this was my dog, who is a golden doodle and has the golden appetite, the dog would be doing the calculation, how long before I can eat him? How long before I can eat my master? Because he would mourn me, and then he'd be like, shouldn't let all this go to waste.
He would want this.
Perfect. Papa would want this. He would.
How long would you have to be unconscious for before your dog would eat you?
Unconscious would do it.
Well, I guess he's gone.
All right. So you must worry when you go to sleep. Okay.
I do. He sleeps at the foot of my bed, and it's not because he's loyal. I'm sure it's not.
He's just waiting for the day.
Yeah. Just hungry.
Give me one of them feet, big dog.
He wakes me up in the morning like for food. It's like, oh, you got to go out, buddy. And he's like, just, yeah, fine. I'll do that. But just get the food in the bowl. He rests his giant head on the edge of the bed.
I had a friend who they had a cat, and the cat would wake him up every morning at 5 a.m. biting their feet.
Nope.
Until they would get up and feed him. And I'm like, how much do you have to love cats or love a cat to put up with this? And then actually, you know, they don't have that cat anymore, it turns out. So maybe not. Maybe there is a limit on that.
Maybe don't be a jerk, cat.
Yeah. That's the news.
We would like to thank everybody, as always, for listening to this episode of Sports Adjacent. I know you're probably sad right now. I know. I can feel it. But you should be really happy because there's still three more episodes of Sports Adjacent.
Including this one, three.
So two more episodes. We have a ton of back catalog that you can listen to literally forever that are all hilarious. I've gone back and listened to episodes from our first year, our second year. They're all really funny. But yeah, thank you guys for listening for all these years. Go ahead.
That's another crazy thing, by the way. When you mentioned this will be the 171st episode, and we'll be at 173 at the end of it. All of that has been, we've done it every week.
Something
has come out for 171 weeks in a row, whether it was Christmas or I was doing it from vacation somewhere, or you were out of town. You did it poolside once. And it's really all been original content, because in 171 episodes, we probably have done, I don't know, somewhere around five-ish best of episodes. But even those are ones where we would spend hours going through old catalog to find the funniest six segments to put in the best of episode. And then Tony and I would curate and narrate those for you, set them up. And like, we put out something freshly made every single week
for three and a half years.
This will be the 171st week now.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So don't cry because it's over. Smile because it happened.
There you go, Carlos. And smile because we've had awesome sponsors like Sheets and Giggles, sheetsgiggles.com/SA to get great discounts like you have always for listening to this podcast. Support Colin through the end of the pod. Support Colin after the pod's over because he's a great dude with a great company, and they have loved and supported us the whole way. So sheetsgiggles.com/SA. They'll always have a discount, a sale for you. Take care of them. They're a great company. Also brought to you by BetMGM. You can bet on everything. Baseball's going on. Basketball's going on. The finals are going on. Before you know it, football season's going to get started. And you can bet on that as well. You go to BetMGM and use our promo code adjacent1000. That is adjacent1000 to get $1,500 back in free betting credit with your first bet. BetMGM, the king of sportsbooks. Jason, anything before we let the folks go this week?
I feel like we'd be remiss and fall short of our duties here if we didn't check in with Mr. Cool to see if he had any thoughts about the show wrapping up, the podcast ending. Oh, he's got to go get his hat for this. Okay. All right.
Oh, Mr. Jason, Rosa, meeting you for the first time, you know, I feel sad. Tú sabes, I feel sad because, you know, I met Herb last week and I said, oh, este Sports Adjacent, I'm going to go on all the time and tell him about be selling some ice cream, you know, tell him about Miami. So it's raining so much every day here. You're coming. You see it on the national news probably because cars are floating down the street, you know. And I thought, oh, I'm going to tell him about Miami. And those may tell me, yeah, Sports Adjacent is going away. It's closing shop. You ruined it. Mr. Cool, we don't like it. No more Sports Adjacent for you. So I broke a heart. My heart is broken. But I love Sports Adjacent. I love Ross. And I love Jason Leeser. And, you know, sometimes maybe we see Mr. Cool somewhere else. No say. I'm away.
Mr. Cool, why every time it rains heavily in Miami do I see some picture on Twitter of a shark swimming on the interstate? I know that's not real.
No, that's a real shark, Jason. That's a real shark, Jason. That's always a real shark. Probably a fake guy. A fake guy with a real shark. You know, that happens. Sometimes a guy's like, oh, look. I'm just a lonely guy traveling on the metro rail. No, but what happened is that guy's a fake guy. You know, he's like, hey, I'm gonna do it for the gram. You know, I'm going to do it for the gram, for the click. You know, they got a click. You know, people go and they click and they get money. You know, only fans shark. You know, only sharks. Oh, the guy's fake. The shark is real. Crazy. The guy's fake. The shark is real.
Oh, Mr. Cool. Gracias, papi.
Gracias, Ross. Great. No more rum punch. Oye, me contaron el cuento de que you had some rum punch. Tienes que tener cuidado hacer it because you drink too much of rum punch. Ya tú sabes, you wake up next to a shark. That's a problem.
Russ, one thing you don't know
on a different kind of shark. You know what I mean?
One thing Russ doesn't know because he's inexperienced with this character is Russ. If you pause for even half a second, Mr. Cool will then talk for 6 minutes straight.
All right, so I won't let Mr. Cool have any more, but maybe we'll see him again before the end of the pod. We'll catch you guys next week.
I think I did a good job not speaking right after Jason there, Pedro.
Thanks for listening to Sports Adjacent with Jason Leisure and Russell Dorsey. Be sure to download, subscribe, and give the podcast 5 stars. You can check out the latest episode of Sports Adjacent on all digital streaming platforms.
I'm very much adjacent. For a couple hours, I thought I was hood. But then all that happened, I was like, you know what, James? You adjacent to the mother.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.